Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. I am Dan Lost. I'm joined by Dan Wallach. This episode will be dedicated to the St. Louis Rams relocation lawsuit. We have on AJ Perez. He's an author at Front Office Sports. Had a big story that came out about Stan Kroenke's $100 million offer to the city of St. Louis. And some additional details about what went on at that NFL owners meeting. Some sentiments about Stan Kroenke, about the indemnification agreement. So we're going to dive into it. But Dan, I'll take credit for this guest. You get credit for Howard Balzer. I'll take credit for AJ Perez this time around.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, AJ has been covering the story much more intensively over the last couple of weeks, couple of months. So he's definitely been on so many of the elements of the story. So thanks for inviting him. He's been breaking some news, and yesterday he definitely broke a big story, but I'm looking forward to learning some additional details about the settlement offer, about some of the scope around the indemnification agreement. There's a lot that we want to quiz him on, and hopefully he'll be forthcoming and we'll learn a few things that are new to the story.
So let us remind our listeners, this podcast is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Check us out, themisbar.com/condetrimental. Leave them a nice note and tell them how great we are, just like you guys have all been leaving those great 5-star reviews, which we super appreciate. Tell our sponsor how much you love them. And Dan, you don't know this, but our lovely Taryn signed up for Themis Bar Review, continuing in the tradition of Stephanie Weissenberger. So now we're basically like, everyone's using Themis. We're using Themis. It's a good deal over here. So a little bit about AJ, and then we'll bring him on. We'll keep this intro pretty short because I know we'll have some comments at the end after AJ leaves us. AJ is a great follow for a number of reasons, right? AJ doesn't just, you know, find something and kind of is an aggregator. When AJ goes into a topic, AJ has some really good sources. He's worked at a number of national media outlets, and he's found his way to Front Office Sports, which, you know, I know a lot of people at Front Office Sports, those guys, if we are sports and law, those guys are sports and business. And as much as this is a sports law story, there's certainly some heavy business components to it. So I thought AJ was a great guest. He's been covering the story. I think, Dan, I think I know what you were saying, that AJ might have been picking up the story because he saw you and I covering it and seeing the traction. But you know what? The more the merrier. I think the more coverage on this, the more answers we're getting. So I think AJ is a great person to come on and break this down with us.
As my former boss, Alan Becker, was fond of saying, and this was a title to a book he wrote, there's always room at the top. And AJ is one of the best in the business. I go back with him to Deflategate, Ezekiel Elliott. He always seems to break stories, no matter what the issue is. He just has a knack for being able to find things, whether it's using public records requests. He is masterful at the art of breaking news and investigative enterprise reporting in the sports industry.
Without further ado, let us turn it over to AJ Perez of Front Office Sports.
We're welcoming back to Conduct Detrimental, our Chevy Chase, back for his third guest appearance on Conduct Detrimental. AJ Perez from Front Office Sports, formerly of USA Today. He's been in this space for a long time. He breaks a lot of news. He's been doing it for about as long as I've been in the sports law field. He broke a big story yesterday on Front Office Sports about some of the, you know, backroom discussions in the NFL owners meeting from several weeks ago. Apparently, there was a settlement offer made by Stan Kroenke to the city of St. Louis to resolve the relocation lawsuit. AJ, welcome to Conduct Detrimental. Let's just dive right in. Can you tell us, you know, a little bit more about the scope of this settlement package and what's going on with it?
Yeah, this is part of a presentation by General Counsel Jeff Bash during the owners meetings a couple of weeks back in New York. ESPN first had a kind of a wide range where Jerry Jones kind of hinted it was in billions of dollars for the settlement. The other end, it was like, you know, and then it was also reported by ESPN that it was more than the net worth of some of the owners, the settlement to settle the St. Louis lawsuit. But it was kind of, I guess, conceivably, if you take away the NFL teams, there's probably some owners who are worth less than $100 million, but $100 million was the offer. Unfortunately, the presentation did not have the time frame of when it was offered. I've been trying to nail that down for a couple of days. It's just had to go with the story without it. The other part of it was the Jerry Richardson angle, which we can discuss as well.
Well, can I ask you a question? Just, and you know, I know you don't have to give up your sources, but how do people like Seth Wickersham and yourself get in behind the doors to get disclosures of these kinds of sensitive details? I mean, this is like a private owners meeting, yet there's so much transparency around it. It's almost like being broadcast on television. How is it so easy or so readily, there are leaks where you can get this kind of access from a meeting where there should be like, you know, everybody should kind of clamp down and not talk to the press?
A lot of it is subject matter. The NFL, the Rams, and Kroenke didn't think it would get this far. I don't think many of the owners thought it would get this far. outside of the Al Davis lawsuit in the 1980s, it hasn't really, the NFL hasn't faced this kind of legal challenge. There's been player stuff and there's been owners. So the Raiders have been sued and other teams have been sued. But this to get this far was, you know, I think it was kind of shocking to them. And it's like, at that point, they're 2.5 months out from trial and they saw the number, which is pretty low compared to what you've talked about, Dan. The other dads talked about, you know, where we're facing $1 billion plus possibly of damages. And it was like woefully low for them. And they were shocked, you know, and this whole thing, $100 million offer. Another source told me that that was basically the ceiling of what Kroenke wants to pay. It's not the ceiling of what there is no ceiling in that agreement. So then the second part of it, they were even further shocked that Kroenke was trying to get out of the one page indemnification agreement.
Whoa, let's back up a second. The indemnification agreement is one page. This has been a source of confusion ever since the indemnification agreement's existence was reported. Can you fill in some of the details about this indemnification agreement? You just said it's one page. What do you know about it?
Dan has surmised that the actual indemnification agreement looks a lot like a contract that might be written on the back of a napkin. We have joked about that on this podcast. In the history of football, there have been resignations put on the back of napkins. Now with a one-page indemnification agreement, the joke might be coming reality at this point.
I don't think it was written on a napkin. I have not seen it. It's been described to me by a couple of people, but it is very straightforward. And it says the commissioner, in this case, Goodell, has the ultimate say on it. And there's no cap to it. Kroenke has to, you know, cover any legal costs that arise out of litigation.
Hold on a second. We're getting, again, into scope issues. You said legal costs. It's been reported by Seth Wickersham that it's legal fees. I've surmised that billionaires are not going to be fighting over lawyers' fees of $5 or $10 million. Is this damages in the lawsuit or just lawyers' fees to pay your own counsel to try the case? What is the scope of this indemnification agreement? Fees or damages?
Legal fees, damages, and any costs that arise out of litigation. And that could include damages, jury verdicts, all that stuff.
Okay, so good. You just broken an exclusive here. Nobody has actually, you know, laid out what the indemnification agreement covers. I mean, I think we've talked about, well, they use the word costs, but what descriptive terms are used in the indemnification agreement to carve out or specify that we're talking about litigation costs, damages, attorney's fees? Have you seen the agreement? And if not, what words have you heard are included within this indemnification agreement that they're fighting over?
I have not seen it. I've had it described to me by a couple of people where it's not just lawyer fees. It's not just court costs. It goes beyond that.
Let's just be clear. I think, AJ, you know, from reading your story, you're speaking to a lot of owners that are not named Stan Kroenke, right? And I think it's fair from your reporting and of course, Seth Wickersham's, that the impression from the majority or at least a significant portion of NFL owners not named Stan Kroenke is this indemnification agreement is supposed to cover everything. And that's not really news to Dan and myself. Indemnification agreements are supposed to be broad. They're supposed to be able to cover costs, damages, you know, you name it, all the way down the line. So I guess from what I'm hearing from you, the impression that you're getting from owners is that it should cover everything. But have you seen, you know, the actual language of this agreement? Have you actually seen it directly?
I have not, but one of my sources had seen it and was familiar with it. That's why I know it's so short, being one page, and it's only a few paragraphs long at that. The exact precise language, I do not have, but it's, from what I was told, it's pretty open-ended. There's no cap to it. It at least covers court costs and legal fees, but you can almost assume that it covers more than that.
Hold on a second. Court costs and legal fees to lawyers, that just means lawyers' fees and deposition transcripts. Just to be clear, we're talking from the perspective of your source, it's the damages that are awarded in the lawsuit, not just the court costs and legal fees, correct?
Yes, it's pretty much what it was described to me. It was pretty much any costs that arise out of litigation. And those costs includes any kind of verdict or any kind of settlement. So it goes beyond that.
Let's go back to the one pager. This is like shocking to me. I've worked in probably hundreds of commercial litigation disputes, and I've done settlement agreements, indemnification provisions. A multi-billion dollar corporation with these high net worth individuals are going to do a one pager on an indemnity agreement. It sounds like it was almost rushed at this Houston owners meeting. What do you know about the circumstances under which this agreement was drawn, when it was drawn, on where it was drawn? It sounds like it was handwritten. You might as well just do a real agreement and cut and paste something from a pre-existing document. Is it handwritten, AJ?
No, it's not handwritten, as far as I know. This was straightforward and simple. It was take it or leave it, Stan. This is the deal. If you don't want to indemnify the league and the owners, you will not get the team.
Who drafted it? The NFL?
Yes, the NFL. The NFL, I'm not sure it's outside counsel or inside, but yes, it was drafted by a lawyer associated with the NFL.
Put your malpractice carrier on notice.
Let me jump in really quick because I think people tune in because they want to hear kind of both sides of it. So obviously Stan Kroenke is, at least if you want to believe the reporting from Seth Wickersham at ESPN, he has made this pronouncement that he feels that the indemnification agreement does not cover damages, that maybe just covers costs. So, I was thinking about this. I was driving home last night. I'm like, how could there be such a miscommunication? So by all indications, right, there was a conversation that occurred between the owners about this indemnification agreement before it was reduced to writing. And that's normally how things happen. So there's certainly a world where, Kroenke thought the agreement verbally was X and it was actually Y. Like there was a misconception between owners about what actually was going to be agreed to. Okay, certainly I think that's maybe possible, right? But at the end of the day, when something is reduced to a writing, usually there's a line in these indemnification agreements that this will supersede any prior oral agreements, that this writing is the final agreement. So kind of at a certain point, independent of what was said in the room, that writing is usually going to be given deference unless there's some extenuating circumstances. But if the writing is different than what was agreed to in the room, generally, in the case of a tie, right, tie goes to the runner, tie goes to the written agreement, absent some type of, weird thing that we don't know about, right? If Kroenke was drunk or it was under duress, they put a gun to his head, something like that. But, AJ, you and I spoke. I don't see anything like that. I don't see anything that would allow him to, the normal situation that would allow someone to get out of an agreement. I just don't see it being met here. Obviously, we need to see the terms. But as a general note, I just, I'm not seeing those type of issues that would allow someone to get out of that type of deal.
I'm not sure. See, the one thing is, like, one of my sources said it was kind of this, even though it was a short agreement, it blindsided Kroenke. Kroenke didn't see it, and it wasn't a full room of owners. There's only a couple, two or three other owners in the room at the time that this document was produced.
Who was in the room, AJ?
From what I understand, it was all the other teams that were involved in this relocation. That means the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Rams. So representatives or owners in for all three, because this impacted them directly. There was going to be a vote, either the Carson site, so that would house the Chargers and Raiders, or the Rams site, which eventually also house the Chargers. They're about 10 miles apart in Southern California. One's SoFi, where we all know where SoFi is now, in Inglewood. But the other one was Carson, where the Chargers played for the first two or three years after leaving San Diego. They're going to build a new stadium out there. That was backed by Bob Iger. And so that was from what I could tell. And it was kind of like, if Kroenke hadn't signed, the NFL owners in that vote would have went towards the Carson site. So Mark Davis and Dean Spanos would have had that team there in Carson, or their stadium there, both their teams in the stadium in Carson.
AJ, I got to give you a lot of credit. You're the best breaking news investigative reporter in the sports industry. You not only break news on Front Office Sports, but you do it on our podcast. This is just absolutely insane. So thank you for diving into the indemnity issue. I have one final question on that, which is the thought that's on everybody's mind. And I don't think we have a clear answer from any of the articles or any of the radio programs where it's discussed. What is Stan Kroenke's argument for why he's not liable under the indemnity agreement? Could it be he just thinks or he's arguing that it covers lawyer fees only? Where is the dispute centered on?
I think it's just the cost of it all. And so we have, you have Kroenke, which is, $100 million. It's going to be way, way more than that to settle. You got that where he's, agreed to at least that amount so far. But, I think it's a cost issue. He's worth over $7 billion, but that's tied up in sports teams. You got the Nuggets, you got the Avalanche, Arsenal, Rams. He's tight. He has a lot of, interests, that are kind of, his values up there. Maybe he's worried he can't come up with the rest of the money. Maybe have to sell something off. Which he very well could, but that takes time. But I don't think he wants to lose any part of his empire to settle something, but on the other side of it, the owners are like, we would have given the Chargers and the Raiders their stadium in Carson. You would have stayed in St. Louis. This lawsuit would never have happened. You had the choice. You chose to sign this agreement. You chose to move to LA. Now you got to kind of, this is your comeuppance.
Let's dig in a little bit to that $100 million number. Then I want to make sure we get to Jerry Richardson as well, which is, I think, important. I think that was a key part of your story that people should pay attention to. But as for the $100 million, let's just talk dollars and cents for a second. It's been reported that some teams in legal spend through the 4 years of this litigation have already spent money in the eight figures. Some teams, I think, are closer to five, six figures, at least the reports that are out there. But you have 32 teams. We'll say 31. We won't put the Rams in this. But you multiply that out. You easily, right? The total cost for all the other 31 NFL teams here might be $100 million. I don't think that's such a stretch at this point. If we already know that some teams are in the eight figures, and again, there's 32 NFL teams, you know, do the math. A litigation over 4 years, you know, you certainly could get to that amount of money with these big law firms that are involved. So the amount of money that Stan Kroenke is offering, $100 million, is obviously no small amount of money, but that's an amount, $100 million, that maybe resembles the overall costs that have been spent in this litigation. So there's a fancy term that we lawyers use, something called nuisance. You might settle something early on in the case for something called nuisance value, which is sometimes akin to cost. Hey, I'd rather not fight you in a long and protracted litigation. I'd rather just give you the cost of what it will, you know, take us to actually defend this case. So $100 million certainly might seem like a big number, but from you know, the optics standpoint, I don't know, $100 million, if that's your offer, and that's about what teams have spent at this point, that's not really saying much. Are you getting any other, I guess I didn't see this in your report, AJ, maybe you can provide some more light on it. Do we know when that offer was made, one, and do we know if there was a counter or if there's any other type of movement, and maybe even, you know, how that was communicated? I don't think we have any details on that.
No, that's the whole thing. This is all part of the presentation at the owners meeting. So there was no time frame. You know, Jeff Bash was up giving a presentation, $100 million figure was up there on the screen. There was no one asked questions, unfortunately. None of the owners did. There was no timetable, that time frame given for when that offer was made to St. Louis.
And we know that St. Louis rejected it.
Yes.
This is, I guess, the next level. Sometimes if you have a case with a lot of parties, a lot of big pocketed parties, sometimes one defendant will pony up a certain amount, right? Let's say that if you look at like a litigation or like a trial, like a piece of pie, the jury's going to allocate fault here, there, the other place. Sometimes one of the big pocketed defendants might offer up a lot of money, but that's not the real offer. The offer is, hey, I'm going to offer up $100 million, and the expectation is that everyone else is going to contribute something else to the pie. Is it your understanding that Stan Kroenke wanted this $100 million to act as the settlement? Or was that intended to be, hey, I'm putting this out here, NFL, other owners, you guys, time to put up your money. Let's put together a global offer. Or have you heard anything like that?
From what I have been told, most of the owners are basically letting Kroenke handle this financially at this point himself. So that offer was from Kroenke. It was not bolstered as far as I've been told, and this is from my sources, multiple sources in the room, that this was Kroenke's offer. It was described as Kroenke's offer. It wasn't described as with Mara, with Bidwell, this is just his offer.
I think it's important, right? You know, the three of us were all kind of sitting here trying to, you know, we're trying to read behind the, on the lines to some extent. If Stan Kroenke is offering $100 million and that is relayed, this is my offer, please relay this to the city of St. Louis. No one else needs to contribute. It's my $100 million. At a certain point, actions speak louder than words, right? We're trying to figure out what Stan Kroenke's argument is to get out of the indemnification agreement. I think he just told us, right? He doesn't have one, or else he wouldn't be offering up $100 million to settle this case. If he really felt strongly that all the other owners were going to bear the burden, right? You know, multiply that out. What's 100 times 32? It's a number that might settle the case, right? $3.2 billion. I have a feeling St. Louis would jump on that, but that's certainly not what we have here. And I don't think Kroenke would be offering that if the expectation was that other people would contribute. So if you ask me, just from what we've heard from your reporting from Seth Wickersham's, I don't think Stan Kroenke thinks he has any chance of getting out of this indemnification agreement. That's just my reading of it.
Yeah, and I think it was the NFL owners are so strong in their belief that he can't get out of it that they were just like, what are you trying? This is not the exact words, but the reaction in the room when he said, when he questioned it, and was sent out by Goodell was like, other owners like, you can't. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, this is a straightforward contract. Almost all the owners were there in 2016 when he was awarded the team. They were like, you didn't have to get this team, but we didn't have to let you go to LA. We've been out of LA for 20 plus years already. You know, we want the right situation. We have two good proposals. We went with you, Stan. So, you know, your team's increased in value a lot since your move. Granted, you had to build a $2 billion stadium, but you know, this is your NLA, your stadium. You own the stadium. You have another team leasing your stadium. You know, it's a beautiful place. Super Bowl is going to be there. You know, you got a lot of things out of it, Stan. You got to pony up. So it was kind of disbelief among ownerships. They were like, what are you doing?
I want to stay on the topic of the indemnity agreement because there's been so little transparency and reporting around it. We spoke off air about some of this unreported aspects to your story, and you relayed an anecdote about the reaction of the other NFL owners as to what their anxiety was over. Can you explain in a little greater detail what you were referring to?
I wouldn't say anxiety. There's a lot of NFL owners who are lawyers who know how this works. I did not. So I didn't know, so if there's a judgment entered and all 32 teams have to pay in something, basically they'll have to pay the damages. It's going to be after all the appeals and everything else is exhausted at that point. Unless, I guess, the judge says you got to start paying now.
Hold on, AJ. Monetary judgments can be pursued immediately upon the issuance of the judgment, even when an appeal is pending and the defendants might have to post the bond.
The judgment creditor,
the plaintiff, is not going to care about an indemnification agreement. They're going to go directly.
Yes.
So
all the owners, unless some get thrown out of the case before trial as defendants, which possibly could happen with one of them. So they basically have to pay out for the judgments and then go back to Kroenke for the money. Hey, I just paid $50 million to St. Louis. Now, Kroenke, pay up. Let's go. So that's going to be I thought that was a very interesting part of the case.
So $100 million settlement offer was tendered by Stan Kroenke to the city of St. Louis, who logically, naturally turned it down point blank. To your knowledge, have you heard about the city making a tender offer? And to this point, has the city even asked for an NFL expansion team as part of a settlement? So I guess it's a two-part question.
St. Louis has been really quiet. The three plaintiffs there have not talked to media. The only thing we can glean really is off the filings, and they don't have to say at this point. Everything's under seal anyway. So we don't know what settlement talks have been offered. We don't know if there was a counter offer, if they have, and obviously they're not going to disclose what's the exact point where they say, all right, $1.2 billion, that's what we want. We're going to stick to it. They're not going to put that out publicly. So there's really we don't know how much what their cutoff is. A lot of fans in St. Louis want there to be no cutoff, no limit. They want a trial. They want the NFL to get embarrassed. They want Kroenke really to get embarrassed. And so there's a big contingent there in St. Louis, and I'll be there in a couple of weeks for the hearing.
Well, they want a team.
Well, I don't know. The reaction on Twitter, which you cannot judge real life from Twitter, but it was like, we don't want the NFL. Screw it. We got screwed over by Bidwell. We got screwed over by Kroenke. But the NFL doesn't want to be in that market. The NFL doesn't. A lot of the owners do not want to be in that market. It's a smaller market. Football hasn't worked there twice.
We had a little bit of an engagement on that last night on Twitter. Howard Balzer sent me some statistics. The attendance figures showed robust support for the St. Louis Rams. They are over 80% capacity every year except
just
for one.
That's reality. But a lot of the owners just have a bad feeling about St. Louis. And it's nothing against the city.
Where does the bad feeling stem from? Is it the size of the market? Is it the bad blood from the litigation? Is it the ability to cobble together a stadium financing plan? Where does the ownership doubt?
I don't know if it's a lot. It's probably partially because I'm not saying the NFL owners are hurt because this litigation's gotten this far, because I think you got to have a little bit of tip the cap that they've gotten this far. It's a situation where Missouri's laws have worked in the plaintiff's favor. I don't think it's the litigation necessarily, but I think it's just that it's just a smaller TV market. I know Vegas got a team. Vegas is Vegas. That doesn't count. But it's kind of like a smaller media market. Really what it comes down to, 90% of it, they don't want to share the money. They don't want to split the revenues again. They don't want a 33rd person to split the revenues. They'll get a little richer off the expansion fee, which could be hundreds of millions of dollars, but they do not want to split the TV revenue and other revenues. They have to split it with the players already. And they don't want to split it with the 33rd owner. That's really what it comes down to.
AJ, point blank, would the owners rather write a check for $2 or $3 billion now immediately as a result of a monetary judgment? Would they rather do that or give the city of St. Louis an expansion team? What do you think the ownership group would rather do? I mean, that's where I think the expansion possibility comes into play.
I would say, well, let's say, so what's, I got to look at the revenues. The new TV packages kick in next year, and that doesn't even include Sunday Ticket yet. So you figure out the cut per team, and then you times that by 20 years, which this year. And TV revenue is probably going to go up in the next TV package. It's going to get even bigger. So if they're doing around $4 billion a year among, and divide that by 32. So what is that?
We're doing
so
math. That's conduct
yeah, I know. So we're having, so what is that? $125 million a year. So that's, worth that. So you got, $4 billion a year, and you're splitting that between 33, you know, it'll be close. I mean, for over a 20-year span, you know, that's you got to think long term. Any move is going to take, you know, a lot. You're going to get the expansion fee, which is great for the NFL owners, but you're also going to probably kick in more stadium funds from the ticket sales that are set aside among all teams.
AJ, you're overlooking one variable in this mathematical analysis: personal liability. We're talking personal liability on the shoulders of the owners as a result of this litigation, as opposed to a sharing of revenues among corporate entities. So,
AJ, I think, you know, we didn't want to keep you so long. I think the last part that we kind of signaled at the top, Jerry Richardson is going to be a fascinating name with respect to the trial. It's a name that maybe current NFL fans, if you're not following the landscape so closely, haven't, you know, maybe you don't know, but Richardson's got brought up in our last podcast when we were talking about owners that maybe had to sell their teams, maybe not forced by the league, but ended up selling their team. So Jerry Richardson's a guy that sold the Carolina Panthers a couple, I think it was a couple months into this lawsuit in 2017, you know, some messy allegations of a racial nature. But he's certainly, I would imagine, not a guy who wants to do any favors for the NFL. He's sitting on the sidelines. He's now 85. I read in your reporting that there is a real concern that Jerry Richardson could tattoo the NFL, that they're really concerned about his testimony. Can you give us some more insight on that?
Sure. He was part of the relocation committee that was kind of formed to determine which site was better. He preferred the Carson site for the that would have housed the Raiders and Chargers. He felt at the time, and I've had in my story, I've actually had to subscribe to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch because they've been doing so much great work on it, and they have a paywall, and I totally support journalism, so I have a subscription there. So I linked to a story from 2015 where, and I have a quote from that story where Richardson said that basically St. Louis, with their stadium proposal, met the criteria, and this is why he preferred the, you know, because Spanos and Mark Davis tried, you know, you can argue they both tried. That's the whole thing. They tried a lot harder to stay where they were, Spanos especially, with two ballot initiatives, and Mark Davis trying to work out a deal in Oakland for a better stadium. Now, they've both tried, and I think it's pretty much most independent observers would say they tried a lot harder than Kroenke to make it work in their respective cities. So that's why Richardson kind of basically favored and came out publicly and said he favored the Carson site and not where SoFi Stadium is now, not allowing Kroenke to leave St. Louis. Granted, this happened like 3 or 4 months before the blind vote that where Kroenke won the proposal 30-2. And unless once were a follower, I don't know. I have to look back at this. I guess Bidwell was one of the two people who voted no. And it was a blind vote. We don't know who the other person who voted no was. But Richardson is kind of a loose cannon. He's not part of the Old Boys Network anymore. I don't necessarily think he has an axe to grind, but he doesn't have to protect the league at this point. You know, he's not part of it. So he did make a lot of money selling the team, but he was a legend. He was one of the most powerful owners in the game. And when you have one of the most powerful owners, someone who is on the committee for, you know, for Southern California for the future team there, there's probably no better, as far as you could probably have no better witness than him when it comes to that, to someone who was inside the NFL, who knew the inner workings, who's publicly came out in favor, basically against Kroenke, in favor of the other stadium site. I mean, that's the people who are worried, though. They haven't even seen the depositions, man. They're just worried, just knowing what went down, and it was an ugly situation, and he was could have been forced out as owner if he didn't just basically, within days of the story coming out, saying, I'm going to sell. He could have been the first owner forced out, at least in the modern NFL. I don't think he has any ill will. I can't tell. He might. But it's just what he knows is, and that he's no longer part of the NFL, is what has a lot of owners worried.
Before we let you go, AJ, you made a reference to the December 3rd meeting. Is that the contempt hearing on the damages or the discovery issue with Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones, Clark Hunt, and John Mara? Or is that a hearing that's supposed to cover much broader subject matter? Can you tell us about what's coming down the road on December 3rd?
I think it's just one of those pretrial hearings. I think it's been on the schedule for a while. So unless it's been changed, I got to double check that. But I have to. I think it's just normal, just kind of just a regular pretrial kind of. It's the last major hearing, as far as I know, before the trial date.
AJ, thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Everyone should go check out AJ's article up now on Front Office Sports. AJ is on Instagram and Twitter at by AJ Perez, which I haven't told you, but I think is a fantastic handle. So go check AJ out. He's a fantastic follow on all things at the intersections of sports and business. And that's why we have some math on this podcast. Well in need, Dan. Long overdue. Some math here.
Yeah, we're going to have to go out and buy a calculator next time.
So, yeah, I think it's $125 million per team per year under the TV deal. Granted, that's before the cut of the players who get about get a portion of that. So
we're going to hold you to that. If you're wrong, we're going to sue you. You're going to get in the mail. Thanks, AJ.
I am dyslexic, so remember that.
Okay, under oath as well for that, too. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you later.
So that was AJ Perez of Front Office Sports. So certainly AJ gave us a lot right at the end. You know, Dan, we were questioning him about this upcoming hearing in December, which by all indications is a pretrial conference, but we're certainly, I think we expect to get some answers on that financial disclosures from the owners. We'll see what comes of it. I find it odd that these owners are still not complying with the clear and unequivocal court order. But my question to you, Dan, I think we have a difference of opinion here. I've been on the plaintiff side. I've been on the defense side. If I don't have certain discovery that I think is really key to my case for whatever reason, and I still don't have it, I'm certainly not going to, you know, willy-nilly go into trial and say, you know what, Judge, I didn't need that discovery anyway. I think there's a world where this January 10th date gets delayed because of two factors. Number one, because of discovery that they still don't have. And at best case scenario, they get it about a month before trial, which I might say, if I'm the plaintiff side, is not sufficient. And number two, Dan, if settlement is actually close, which we do not have any indication of that as of today, there's a world where both parties say, you know what, Judge, please, can we delay this trial a little bit? We're actually pretty close on settlement. I do think there's a world where January 10th does not hold. Maybe there's another factor we don't know about, but I think there's a world where January 10th doesn't hold. I really do.
I'm going to disagree with you on this. Well, it's not disagree factually, it's just disagree on the opinion. There's no way that St. Louis is going to move this trial date. They have, and we haven't seen all the deposition transcripts, they have enough in their war chest to go to trial here. And there are remedies available to the city, county, and the stadium authority if they don't receive the request to discovery within a certain time frame. I mean, already the city of St. Louis has asked for sanctions, including the striking of pleadings, the entry of default judgment against the four recalcitrant owners. If these owners don't come through with the discovery by December 3rd, well, that's sort of the next shot across the bow that's going to occur. And the city would sooner ask for severe discovery sanctions than move off that January 10th trial date. Judges do not like to alter or change their calendar because this is going to be a lengthy trial. It could take up to 2 months to try a case of this magnitude. And you just don't go to a court 6 to 8 weeks before a January 10th trial date that's going to last for 2 months and say, we don't have all the discovery. We want to move the date. It will be the NFL, if anybody, that asks for that. And I think that moment has come and gone because the time to have asked for continuance of the trial schedule should have been much sooner, earlier in the process than inside of 2 months left to go before trial. It's too late, barring an emergency. I don't see this trial date being moved, and the Super Bowl cannot constitute a plausible excuse because the NFL knew that the Super Bowl was going to be played in early February years ago. It's not a sufficient excuse to bring up at this late stage of the proceedings.
Okay, Dan, we'll see what comes of it as we get close to January 10th. I don't want to bury the lead. The big takeaway and probably the title of this podcast once we get in the lab after is going to have to do with this indemnification agreement. Dan, one thing that we didn't bring up with AJ, we keep talking about the indemnification agreement, but let's not lose sight of this. And anyone who's feel free to steal this comment, I think it's an area that needs to be explored a little bit more. We're talking about one indemnification agreement. Okay, so when the Rams moved from St. Louis to Los Angeles, they apparently asked Dan Kroenke to sign an indemnification agreement. Great. Were there indemnification agreements that were signed similarly by the Raiders and by the Chargers? I think that's an interesting question here, right? Because you have to ask, assuming, right, I haven't heard about any other indemnification agreements. Maybe there are, maybe someone can correct me. But if the only one, right, and AJ, he made me think about it on his podcast, his comments, his opinion, at least, not mine, the Chargers and the Raiders did more to try to stay in their home markets. And I think by all indications, I think obviously St. Louis will agree with us. Stan Kroenke didn't do as much as maybe he should have, maybe he was required to, or maybe the other owners did. So why was an indemnification agreement offered specifically, if that was the case, solely to Stan Kroenke, right? Dan, could that specifically be because the NFL was worried about liability because maybe they had a guilty conscience that they didn't do enough? What do you think about this tinfoil hat theory over here?
No, I mean, the indemnification agreement to me reflects that the ownership and the other member clubs weren't in favor of the relocation. And this was the sort of the consideration to switch the vote. That's what John Mara said at the NFL owners meeting a couple of weeks ago. Why would there have been an indemnification agreement? You have to understand why, what were the surrounding circumstances?
But why only one? Why wouldn't there be three? Does that make sense?
Because Stan Kroenke was behind this entire thing. I mean, again, I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but clearly, as John Mara, pointed out through the reporting of Seth Wickersham, he's saying we're going to vote against without this kind of protection. And it does indicate that either the NFL owners didn't follow the NFL relocation guidelines, or they did follow it and were prepared to vote against relocation without having this kind of a protection. But anyway, this is all going to be speculation. What did happen during this interview with AJ was we learned quite a bit more about the indemnification agreement. Details have finally been filled in that have been elusive for the last couple of weeks. And I think we broke a couple of, AJ again, broke a couple of big stories about this agreement.
So I guess my final comment, I don't know if you have anything else. Dan, I've been watching Succession, which has become one of my favorite shows on HBO. There's right now a lawsuit that's brewing, a fight between two families. You don't need to watch the show. You'll understand this concept. And there's certain family members that are kind of swaying between which side they're going to go to. So one family says, we want to have a unified front. So if someone's on the fence, we're going to pay, or we're going to do something to convince them to stay on our side. We want to have a unified front just in case there's litigation, congressional hearings, whatever else comes of it. For anyone that watches the show, that's my friend, cousin Greg, who is my favorite on the show. If you're listening to the comments with respect to Jerry Richardson, this seems to be a man who is outside of the NFL shield. He's outside of the establishment. And I think logically that's someone that they should be worried about. He has a dog in the race, it's going after the NFL, who required him to sell his team. They did not do the same thing, or required, pressured, whatever term you want to use. It wasn't a formal forcing. But Dan Snyder's not getting that treatment. Certainly other owners in different sports aren't getting that treatment. And maybe Richardson has a bone to pick. But I would certainly be concerned about him. And I think we got to pay very close attention as trial gets closer. Again, we don't know what Jerry Richardson said in his deposition testimony, but these sources are with the NFL. And that's the word that AJ is getting, that they are concerned about his testimony if this does get to trial.
And Jerry Richardson is a very important figure regarding, NFL relocations. He testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1999, and he took a very expansive view of the economic benefit that would inure to cities from having an NFL franchise. He spoke of it not just in terms of direct tax revenue, but the overall economic development. And his testimony could also be very crucial to helping the city of St. Louis build its damages model in recovering lost income, lost revenues, direct and indirect, because his testimony does view the benefit to a municipality as being much greater than sort of the out-of-pocket expenditures or the loss of certain tax revenues. So he's a pivotal witness with an axe to grind, and the NFL should rightfully fear him on the witness stand. So anyway, this is a sensational development that AJ just dropped on our lap here. He breaks the story on Front Office Sports, but I think the more fascinating angle to this is we learn more about the granular details of this so-called indemnification agreement. It was only one page? Are you kidding me? We're talking about a multi-billion-dollar corporation, 32 owners that are worth, whose net worth are measured in the billions, and the best that they can come up with is a one pager that, for that one page, doesn't even specify with precision we don't know the answer to that, but there seems to be some ambiguity and disagreement about what it actually covers. And obviously this is a drafting lesson for young lawyers and law students, but it does boggle the mind that a multi-billion dollar potential judgment will come down to sort of how you allocate the risk based upon a single one-page, hastily written indemnification agreement that might have been drafted sort of, in a hotel banquet room, for all I know, with handwriting. This boggles the mind, and it does, in my view, maybe bolster the case that Stan Kroenke has, that maybe there's more to the confusion around this agreement than meets the eyes. I mean, it sounds like there's some ambiguity around this, and if I'm one of the other NFL owners, maybe it's not such an airtight case that Kroenke is definitely responsible to indemnify the owners, because if I was sitting in their shoes, from their lens, I would be much more confident about the outcome if this were an extensively drafted written agreement, multiple pages, it's gone through lawyers review, multiple sets of lawyers review, and it just shuts it down tightly. Then if I'm one of those other owners, I tell Stan Kroenke to go pound sand. But what I'm sensing and the feeling that I'm getting is that maybe there's some ambiguity around this, and there's a level of risk for the other NFL owners that simply would not be there with a more comprehensively drafted written agreement. What this means to me is the upshot is there's uncertainty from each NFL owner's perspective as to whether they may be liable. And that ups the chances for an expansion team being offered, right? Because now if you're Mara, if you're Clark Hunt, if you're Jerry Jones, if you're Woody Johnson, now this is going to impact you personally because the NFL didn't do its job in drafting the indemnification clause. So I think if anything, the prospects for an expansion team have gone up in my mind rather than stayed neutral or gone down.
I don't know if it changed in my head, but I will say, Dan, you know, as I gave a quote to AJ when he was writing a story for Front Office Sports, one of the conditions that you can get out of it in a type of agreement like that, and I mentioned proverbially pointing a gun in someone's head, it's this concept in the law called duress. If you are forced to sign something and you feel implicit pressure, you don't need an actual gun, but if you feel forced to sign something, that can be a grounds for getting out of this particular agreement, an agreement. So, Dan, you know, I don't even necessarily care about ambiguity at this point. If this was a hastily written agreement that was written on a hotel computer, right? Again, that's a hypothetical situation. I don't like to speculate, but if Kroenke said, fine, if you draft me something up and it's short, I'll sign it. Just get out of my face. You know, that would seem to be the terms or a way that a one-page agreement is drafted. Dan, with billions at stake, it would seem very odd that what would be drafted as a final release would be that short. I mean, we'll have to see it at some point. I will take AJ's word for it. But if it was one page, I think that does give some credence to the thought that there is maybe more to this behind the scenes. But, you know, I don't think it's changed my opinion on the expansion team. I still think that would have to come post-judgment if the NFL is really worried. But, Dan, to your point, you pointed this out. You kind of, if you're St. Louis, you're kind of rooting for Stan Kroenke on this to be able to get out of this indemnification agreement, because that then applies exponentially more pressure on the NFL and their pockets.
Well, let's talk about some of these other arguments you've raised. You talk about gun to the head and adhesion contract. Well, that takes care of one of the elements, right? Procedural unconscionability. The NFL sort of put a gun to your head to make you sign it. But you also, in many jurisdictions, I've got to look up the law in Missouri, but you also need to have substantive unconscionability, not just procedural unconscionability. So that's one argument. But you also, I think, raised an issue that I hadn't been thinking about previously. The brevity of the agreement suggests that maybe the enforceability issue goes around the lack of all the essential terms being incorporated in this agreement, that this is more along the lines of an agreement to agree and not an enforceable agreement because it lacks all the essential and material terms necessary to have an enforceable contract. I hadn't thought about that previously.
That's why you and I are yin and yang, but I'm going to push back on my own point for a second because we got to go point and counterpoint. Dan, why is Stan Kroenke bringing this argument up in 2021 when this litigation has been going on for 4 years? I think that will also be a factor working against him, right? Do you really believe that this wasn't a final term? Why wasn't this brought up when the lawsuit started? If there's millions in legal spend being spent on this case, you probably should have brought this up ahead of time. And I think that's the frustration that we're hearing, you know, again, per the reports from AJ and Seth Wickersham, that the owners were frustrated at Stan Kroenke's kind of last minute, hey, by the way, I'm trying to get out of this agreement. You know, I think that's going to weigh in against him being able to get out of it because he brought it up so late, right? I can't, that doesn't really seem to make sense to me. Agreement's been in effect for years, and he's bringing it up now. That doesn't make sense.
Dan, at the risk of turning this into the sort of the toast in that famous bachelorette party episode scene in Bridesmaids, I have one final thing to say. You know the scene I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Don't worry. I won't re-toast you. Go ahead.
So, okay, it does raise another issue. I understand that this agreement came together very quickly, but why not in the aftermath, post-owners meeting, did they not try to memorialize it in writing with drafts going back and forth? I understand presenting it to Kroenke to sign during that meeting and wanting to, you know, secure a signature before the final vote, but they could have always amended that writing with a more comprehensive writing setting forth all the material terms of the agreement. And that failure may lie and fall on the NFL's shoulders and could be a factor that is more favorable to Stan Kroenke. So there's a lot that we've begun to really think about around this indemnification agreement. It won't come into play until he sues over it. So we may never learn about the details. but it does sound like more and more that there's ambiguity rather than certainty around the language.
Dan, I will not re-toast you. That was my promise to you. You can hold me to that. Just a reminder, this episode is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Again, for those would-be test takers for this next year, we highly recommend Themis Bar Review. Dan and I did not take Themis because it was not as rocking and rolling as it is now. But I'm sure, Dan, if you rewind the clock on us, decade for me, maybe a decade or so for you, we would be customers of Themis Bar Review, the top bar prep company in the entire solar system. We'll go solar system this time. Dan, pretty happy with where we left it. Anything to add before we put this episode in the books?
No, I'm very happy. We learned a lot about the clause, the indemnity clause from AJ. It was a great episode. And I love when we're able to break news and or shine light on these developments that haven't been brought out before. So this is a very illuminating episode. We learned quite a bit more about the sort of the background to this relocation decision. So
as always, Dan Wallach is on social media at Wallach Legal, myself, Dan Lust at Sports Law Lust, the show at Con Detrimental, and our website, conductdetrimental.com. For all of us here, we will see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.